My name's Lori Neuendorf. I'm 62 years old, and today's date is July 25th, 2007. We're at the Milwaukee Public Library in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I'm here talking with my life partner, Catherine McConnell.
Yes, I'm Kathy McConnell, and I'm 63 years old. Today, what day did we say it was?
The 25th.
July 25th, 2007, at the Milwaukee Public Library. Again, I'm with my life partner of almost 20 years, Lori. So I'm going to start out by asking Lori to talk a little bit about her life in rural Pewaukee when she grew up.
Yes, I was born in Milwaukee, but after World War II, my father was a vet. After World War II, we moved to Pewaukee and lived in the country for 5 years, and it was a wonderful experience. I recall the summers especially being a block of unstructured time. I had no idea what day of the week it was, and it was a wonderful way to grow up. I attended a one-room school for several years, and the outhouse was out and back, one for boys, one for girls. We had desks that were all attached. We did not have a wood-burning stove, however, but that was also a very nice experience.
And so it was very rural?
It was very rural. We had a party line for the phone.
I forgot about those.
Yes, and to get a hold of the children to play with, we'd climb to the top of our swing set and yell, "Come on over," and they'd do the same thing until one group relented and came, walked through the field to play with the other one. And we moved to Milwaukee when I was 10 years old, to Wauwatosa. And
do you think that's there. Where you got your love of nature?
It is. I love being outside. My brother and I just loved all the plants. Our parents taught us names of plants and trees and animals. And that's something that I feel I passed along to my children, too, the love of that outside, outdoors. You
know, she's known everywhere as a tree, literal tree hugger.
Yes, I do hug trees.
I think we have a picture of her hugging trees on every vacation we've ever taken, with the exception of Palm Springs when she wouldn't hug this palm tree that had leafage all over it.
Which could harbor snakes.
Right after we saw a rattlesnake.
That's right.
But that's an important thing in both of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
The outdoors. We do camping and canoeing and spend a lot of time up north.
We lived in the city then, Wauwatosa, went to public schools there, and actually I attended college at UWM, and I went into education, and French was the area that I loved very much. Learned it in high school and junior high, was steered that way by a guidance counselor. And I had a crush on my French teacher, but I didn't quite understand it at the time.
So you are asking me to talk about my youth?
Yes. Where were you born?
So I was born in Iowa, actually. My father was in the Pacific Theater during World War II, and my uncle was in Africa and Burma all at the time that I was born. So my mother, my aunt, and my grandmother and I all lived together in Iowa. They came from farms. They were rural people. My mother grew up on a farm with, back in the days when they still used horses to do the plowing, she went to school on a horse-drawn hay wagon, and they had Clydesdales and things like that. I think it was not till after the First World War sometime when they got tractors. So they were strong women, and my aunt and my mother and my grandmother were very much my role models.
Independent?
Very, very independent, and pretty strong women, and not particularly afraid of things. They weren't well educated mostly because they didn't have the opportunity. But my father went to college as an engineer, and he was determined that I should go to college, and my brother. And so we didn't really have to make a decision about whether we were going to go or not. None of my friends when I was in high school went except for me, and I wouldn't probably have gone. I was pretty insecure about it, actually.
About going.
About, I didn't think I was smart enough.
Mm-hmm. That proved to be wrong.
So, well, I don't know if it did or not, but it did get through, so.
Where did you go to school?
Well, I went to Beloit College mm-hmm. in southern Wisconsin, which I picked out because it had a very famous little observatory, and I was very interested in astronomy.
Mm-hmm. And so did you follow that interest?
Well,
in
no.
school?
I ended up in science, though. I really mm-hmm. I'm a scientist. I was born a scientist, and I look at life very much from the scientific point of view rather mm-hmm. than the artistic. Mm-hmm. I wish I was a little bit more artistic, but what the heck. Mm-hmm. So I started my career at the Blood Center doing research.
In Milwaukee?
In Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. And what type of research did you do there?
Well, I worked on the ROGAM project, actually, which was a preventative treatment method for Rh positive negative issues with babies.
Actually, I benefited from that. I had a ROGAM shot after my second child was born.
Ah.
There was our first connection.
Yeah, so anyway, I really liked research. I had a couple of great bosses, and one of them was a Dutch fellow. And I worked for him, and in his immunochemistry lab, I was the supervisor, and we did some, in addition to research, we also did some diagnostic things mm-hmm. that weren't done elsewhere. So the diagnostic stuff got popular enough around in the medical community that we needed some assistance, so he hired me a technician to work in the lab with me. And
were you the supervisor of the lab?
Yeah, I was. And he was then he told me that he was going to pay the technician $400 a month. Well, he was paying me
$325. Oh, that doesn't
so
sound
said,
right.
Well, I thought I was the boss, you know? And he said, oh, well, you know, Russell can't work for any less than that. He's married and he has three kids and, you know, he needs the money. So, well, I was flabbergasted.
And? Angry, no doubt.
And angry and hurt, I suppose. Anyway, I was so mad I didn't come to work the next day because I knew I couldn't talk about it. And he understood that what I was mad about and how he had to fix it, but I don't think he ever really understood why. It didn't make sense to him that I should be mad. Mm-hmm. He did give me a raise, and so it turned out to be quite nice that Russell did me a favor.
It turned out okay.
But I did, I have to say that, you know, in the workplace, that was one occasion when I encountered discrimination.
As a woman in the workplace. Did you have any other situations?
Well, later on, I was working for Briggs & Stratton in the chemistry lab with six other chemists, and we had a common secretary.
And the other chemists were men?
All the other chemists were men, mm-hmm. right. And in fact, I kind of got hired because it was as an affirmative action sort of
thing. So this is the other side of the coin.
Yes, that's right. I did kind of benefit. They actually looked for me.
Mm-hmm.
They knocked on my door. Anyway, we had Boss's Day. It was the first Boss's Day. And she put this big sign up over her desk and said, Happy Boss's Day. And she put all the guys' names on there. But she didn't have my name on there. So I said, well, how come I'm not up there? She said, oh, you're a woman. You can't be a boss. She was probably 25 at the time, and I was really appalled to think that she thought, particularly to think that she thought she was limited in that way.
Yes.
Yes.
She's a woman. She was not ever going to be the boss.
I guess not. Mm. So, but I've been working for 37 years in my field, and I've always been a single career person, basically. Mm-hmm. What about you, Laura?
Well, I taught for 3 years, let me go back to some time that I spent in college. I joined a sorority on the advice of a friend. That proved to be a good decision because UWM at that time was still the commuter college. It was very lonely, actually, I found, because there was no place to meet people. And so the union was built, and we had a place in the union. Each sorority had a table. And so I had friends, made lots of friends. And I spent some, I dated and went to parties. And I saw my friends, my sorority sisters. I saw people pairing up, going steady, becoming engaged, even getting married, enjoying themselves. And I knew that the men on campus, there were some people that I thought were very nice people. And but I didn't see anybody interesting there. I didn't understand it. I thought it was a defect that I had, that I didn't know how to love, maybe. And but that kind of passed, and I remember sitting there looking around, thinking that. And so anyway, I did date dated one person in particular for a while and became pregnant. And so we married. I remember asking him, do you really want to get married? And he said yes. And I didn't ask myself, though. I was still not aware of what was going on. In fact, we married, and my mother told me later that during the ceremony, she wanted to take my hand and say, let's get out of here, because she knew it wasn't right. So anyway, I taught for 3 years after the baby was born.
But having the baby was
oh yeah, that was
really
great.
Nice.
That was great. That was wonderful.
For you.
I really hadn't.
You love motherhood.
I hadn't experienced that the enormity of the love you can have for a child or a person before. So I taught for 3 years and put my husband through grad school. I did all the housekeeping, all the laundry, shopping, all the cooking, cleaning, childcare, taking the child to and from daycare. Well, it was a babysitter. There was no daycare. And I did the teaching to support him through this process of grad school. And at one point, the professor wanted all the grad students and their wives, because that's how it was looked at that time, grad students and their wives, that a grad student couldn't be a woman, all the grad students and their wives to invite them to a party. And I thought, oh, great, I'll get to meet some people. But when we got there, his ulterior motive was that he wanted the wives to get together and to do set up social events for the group. Well, we all looked at each other, and each one of us had the same workload. We were doing that superwoman thing. We were all working. We were all doing childcare. We were getting our husbands through school. Not everyone had a child, but we were all, you know, doing already too much, and no one volunteered for that project, and we never had social events. No one said, well, why don't you plan it? And no one said anything. We were so astounded, but it just stopped there. So
when did you start to realize that your marriage wasn't working and there was maybe something you needed to work out yourself?
Well, as I said, I knew there was something missing when I was in college. As a young married woman, I had some depression, nothing severe, but enough for me to realize that something wasn't right. But after 3 years of teaching, my husband graduated, received a job, you know, got his graduate degree, got a job, and I wanted to have another child and ended up having 5 children altogether, you know, some of the best times of my life. Enjoyed it very much.
All girls.
All girls. I enjoyed all the, everything about it. And however, when... I knew that things weren't quite right when, before my 4th child was born, on one evening when my husband, it's a drinking problem, and I remember thinking that night, you know, when these children are 18, I'm leaving. That's it. I know this is not working. I don't know why I thought 18 would be better than something else, but that's what I decided. And then during the 70s and 80s, I enjoyed all that back to basic stuff that we did, which was cooking, gardening, canning, cooking, sewing, and the recycling movement was really in its infancy. And we did all those things. I enjoyed that very much. And it kind of insulated me from the political world, things that were going on at that time, too. But eventually... eventually I became aware that it wasn't working, and I needed, it wasn't going to work. And it's about that same time, my husband decided that his job in town was just sort of drying up. It wasn't working well, and he wanted to go to the West Coast. He felt there would be more of an opportunity there, and he tried to hire a realtor to sell our home. And I think he realized how serious I was when I refused to sign with the realtor. And the reason I didn't want to leave town is I had five children. I knew my marriage was not going to work. My support system was in town, was here, my extended family. And my lifetime teaching certificate, my license to teach at that point, it was lifetime. And I would always have a job that way.
Did you have some doubts about your sexual identity then?
No, not yet. Not at that point. Okay. I was still...
So the marriage was breaking up because it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
Not because you felt you needed to go somewhere else.
No. And, you know, he was gone a lot. He traveled a lot. This allowed me to become very independent. I did everything, and it was very self-sufficient, and that really strengthened me, the fact that he was gone all the time.
You didn't have to be confronted with each...
No, and we didn't... Yes, and I didn't...
With your relationship
right.
or lack thereof.
Yep. So, eventually,
so
he left. Okay.
Okay. So you need
west.
To go a little faster, I think.
Okay.
If you want to get to the stuff you want to get to.
Okay. So, he left, and with my blessings. And
how did you get into the lesbian community then? Met somebody at work?
Yes. I needed to go to work. I couldn't find many jobs in teaching at that time, unfortunately, but I did find some. And I found a job outside of teaching, a retail job, and I met some women there who were lesbians, and they referred me to the Counseling Center of Milwaukee, mm-hmm. which had support groups for women. I was very... needy. I really needed to meet other people like me myself. All these other women were single. They had never been married, or didn't have children. Here I was. I had five children. I needed to know other people. So I wanted to join a support group. It sounded like a great idea. And I had to wait 6 months because there weren't any starting just then. But that's how I met other women.
And you met me.
And I met you in that support group. And actually, you know, you had a job and you were talking about your job experiences, and I was stumbling along trying to make ends meet, and I thought you had it all together and we would just never click, and I dismissed you immediately because that would never
work. Fortunately, I didn't have it all together and we did click.
That's right.
Yes. That was an over 40 support group.
It was.
And I had started at the counseling center with one of their earlier groups called, what was it called? Free Space, I think, which was for lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just broken up from a lesbian relationship and was having a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
A lesbian friend of mine had committed suicide because she had broken up with her lover and came from a very homophobic family. She had gone to talk to her priest. They were Irish Catholics. And the priest had told her she was going to go to hell and she better change her ways. And when she broke up with her lover, she just didn't have anywhere to go.
No place to turn.
She committed suicide. And wrote me a letter about it, actually. So that kind of put me kind of on the edge because I had just had a relationship end. And
mm-hmm.
with my brother's encouragement, I went to the counseling center.
Mm-hmm. And you attended two other groups,
two
right?
support groups. I met a lot of people that way, and then
mm-hmm.
and then we did the over 40s.
Yes,
and
that's
at that
we
point
met.
That I was really just doing that for more for social than for
to meet people.
Therapy.
Yeah,
therapeutic.
Yeah.
And that was a great group. We had very mm-hmm. interesting people.
We did. Some of them are still our friends after all these years.
An ex-nun and a channeler and who else?
We had people we had a woman who was still in a marriage with her husband. We had people who had been involuntarily committed for mental health reasons because they were struggling with their orientation.
Now, I too was very late in life coming to the realization of my sexual identity. And it isn't so much that, it was really astounding to me now to realize that I never even really thought about it. Nobody ever talked about lesbians or gays,
right,
when I grew up. I mean, I didn't even know there was such a thing.
Didn't know there was a choice.
My feelings for women, I thought, were just how everybody felt.
That's what I thought, too.
So it wasn't until I was in my 30s that I started questioning and finally decided I needed to meet some lesbians. I knew one lesbian on my baseball team.
Mm-hmm. And where did she direct you?
And she sent me to the lesbian bar in town. there were actually two
Which ones were they?
She sent me to the Sugar Shack, which was down in the Third Ward and was very dark and lots of warehouses.
Who would ever want to go there?
A little quiet street.
Mm-hmm.
The windows were all painted so you couldn't see in. And I went down there by myself.
That's scary.
And I walked in, and there were maybe 15 women in the bar, and they were very tough. And I thought, uh-oh, I don't know. So they were wearing leather, some of them, and whatnot. So I sat at the bar and talked to the bartender for a while. She was a nice lady. Lady?
Mm-hmm.
Joanne?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'd call her a lady. But anyway, I was pretty uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And then one of the patrons bumped up against the bar, and a switchblade that she had in her pocket opened up and stabbed her in the leg. So we had to call the hospital, or they had to take her to the hospital. And I was like, oh no, this is not, I'm never going to fit in here with this group. So I was quite discouraged. And then my friend on the baseball team said, oh, that was just a bad night. Come on, I'll go down there with you.
So you went again?
I went again. And that night I met a gal from Briggs & Stratton.
Your own company?
My own company, which is how we were talking, because she had some gossip from the second shift. And she was also had a band.
Uh-huh.
There was a lesbian band that she was a singer in, the lead singer. She's kind of a Janis Joplin type. She did a great Proud Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she had a tambourine there, and we were horsing around with it, and this friend of mine that from the baseball team managed to put her fist through the tambourine. So I said to Marsh, her name was Marsha, but we all called her Marsh, well, I'll buy you a new tambourine on Saturday. So we made a date to go tambourine shopping.
And what did that lead to?
Then she took me home and seduced me.
Oh, so no.
That was very nice.
Yes.
She always said afterwards that I treated it like a scientific experiment.
And you did, probably.
Which probably I did, yes. Mm-hmm. So then we were sort of partners for about 6 months. She actually had a partner, but her lover was in basic training for the Army for 6 months. So they sort of had given each other freedom.
In between, okay. So then what happened after the 6 months?
Well, her partner came back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were back together again, and I, you know, so we were just friends, and mm-hmm. I met somebody else,
mm-hmm.
met Diane.
Mm-hmm.
I had a relationship with her for about 7 years,
mm-hmm.
so.
Well, and then we met in our group, and dated, and it was kind of difficult. I worked until 11 at night, and then I'd come over to your house. And we'd spend some time together, but then I'd have to get up in the middle of the night and go home so I could be there in the morning because I wanted to be there to get my kids off to school.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went through that. And that worked all right. Some of the older children were there through the night.
So we were kind of sneaking around for a while, but then you were very honest with your kids, and so you decided to tell them.
Yeah.
You did tell them.
Yes, it was important to do that. So I told them... some individually and some, you know, two of them I told together. And I said, well, you know, I want you to know that I'm a lesbian. And they didn't have any problem with the term. They all knew everything, what everything was, unlike me when I was that age. And once I said, I gave them some suggestions, you know, about what might happen. I said, well, what would you do if someone said, Your mom's a lesbian.
This was to Katie, the youngest.
Yes. She said, yeah. What would you do? Because I thought that might come up. And she said, well, if it was Elizabeth, I'd say, yeah, well, you've got spaghetti hair. So that solved that one. Apparently, it wasn't a big issue.
And what did Lisa say?
And then I took Lisa for a ride, and we talked about it. And
Lisa's the middle
yes,
daughter.
Yes, so I said, Lisa, you know, I want you to know that I'm a lesbian. She said, oh, Mom, I already knew that. So that's kind of how it went. And I had to come out to my parents. I did that one year, visiting them up north over Christmas. And they knew, too, but we needed to say it. And they were very supportive.
Yes, fortunate. We are both very fortunate
yes,
to have
our families.
Good, strong family yeah. lives. Now, my mother is not terribly supportive. In fact, my mother didn't want to know about it.
Right.
Pretty well told me.
But now, your mother and I are great friends, so.
Well, I had some health problems two or 3 years ago where, you know, I was really seriously ill. And the issue we were worried about, the issue of whether Lori was going to be recognized as my primary health giver or
caregiver.
And so we were pretty open about our relationship at the hospital. We more or less almost shouted it at them. So my mother had to deal with it, even though she'd been sort of much in denial most of the time.
And
so
sheltered from it,
she
really.
Finally ends up, I mean, she knew, but, you know, she, anyway, she finally had to deal with it at the age of 90.
Yes.
But she's done okay.
She has, yeah.
Yes.
And the support of our families, for me, I know it's been just very important through my life.
It took them a while.
It took, sure.
And they always have some guilt. You know, they feel like it might be their fault.
Well, my mother has two sisters who have daughters who are lesbians also, so at least she has her family to talk to.
Three out of six.
Yeah.
Girls.
So, had lesbian daughters.
And my family, for that matter, my mother had 24 aunts and uncles, and only three of them married. I mean,
it must be in your genes, too.
I certainly think it's genetic, and, you know, the bachelor Norwegian farmer thing that Garrison Keillor talks about seems to be quite true in my family, because they were all Norwegians, mm-hmm. bachelor Norwegians, and they lived together in groups mm-hmm. of brothers, or sometimes even a sister. The mm-hmm. sister's married, but I think they more or less had to.
And, mm-hmm. It was expected of women.
Then they, if their husbands died first, which the men seemed to do back then, mm-hmm. They never remarried. So I don't know. I've always thought there might be some genetic basis in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we wanted to talk about was the Women's Festival. Back when I was going out with Marsh, my first lover, we went mm-hmm. to New Orleans and for a while, and we heard about this Women's Music Festival that was happening in Michigan. We didn't hear about it here.
What year was that?
That would have been 79 or mm-hmm. so. When we came back here, we made a real concerted effort to find out about it and called the newspaper, the local gay and lesbian newspaper. I think we finally called a Lesbian Connection, which was a magazine, the national magazine that mm-hmm. was published.
And still is.
Still is. Finally got a phone number for Lisa Vogel, who is one of the founders mm-hmm. in Michigan, and we found out about it, and we went to the festival mm-hmm. in Michigan.
And what was that like?
Oh, that was incredible, because there were 2,000 women there,
mm-hmm.
and it was pretty basic. I mean, we were camping in the middle of fields with furrows and no trees.
Mm-hmm.
We had showers outdoors that were icy cold, but there was a natural amphitheater, and they had set up a wonderful stage, and it was just such a wonderful feeling of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It was in those days, you know, when we had the bars with the painted windows, and people would throw rocks through them, or one time somebody even shot into the sugar shack.
Mm-hmm.
We were used to being not accepted, and mm-hmm. always a little bit on guard.
Mm-hmm.
And here we felt like it was our space, mm-hmm. and we were there with a lot of other people like ourselves. And it's still that way.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And as a matter of fact, we're going, in 2 weeks to the, what would that be, about the 27th or 28th?
No, it's probably the 32nd or something.
Really?
Yep, the 30th. And, of course, it's a music festival, so there are performers.
Yes.
All day long.
And nowadays, there are three stages mm-hmm. and all kinds of workshops and other mm-hmm. things to do. And it's really, for me, it's a spiritual experience.
It is.
And it's a place where you meet people from all different countries, all different backgrounds and socioeconomic. I mean, there's one thing about our minority is it's everybody.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. we meet all different kinds of people with all different kinds of viewpoints. And there's a dialogue there that just plain doesn't happen mm-hmm. On TV or on the radio mm-hmm. That I just really, truly enjoy.
Yeah, very interesting topics, that's for sure.
And there always is a dialogue, and there usually is some political thing we're all hot mm-hmm. bothered about right now. We're having trouble with what to do with transgender people.
Right, so there's a...
Anyway...
But we're not checking chromosomes at the door.
A few years ago, we were trying to figure out what to do with the S&Mers. Mm-hmm. When we first started out, we were trying to figure out what to do with men.
Yeah, the boy children. Would they be allowed to come onto the land?
At what age did you not allow them? And mm-hmm. how could you not let women come with their children?
Mm-hmm.
So
that was resolved.
We had to work that all out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, was there other things that you wanted to talk about?
I actually
got through it all.
Yes. Well, I wanted to mention that, you know, my parents have retired from and are living up north near a town called Butternut on Butternut Lake. And this is a place where my father was born, actually. And now they live there. And the land adjacent to their home has a cottage on it that was built in the early 1900s by my great-grandfather, and I spent summers there. And this is another place where I learned to love nature and
We went camping when I was a kid. That's mm-hmm. partly where I got my love of nature from, because my father had tremendous wanderlust,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like some of the first people to go camping. When we went camping, there weren't even campgrounds.
We'd
put our tent up in the middle of a field or something. And one night we were going out west, we put our tent up in the middle of a field, and there was this little soft lump in the middle of the floor. It had a floor in the tent. So we went to sleep anyway. When we took the tent down in the morning, it was a little nest of snakes. my mother was most upset. And even as a farm lady, she usually could handle most things, but that bothered her.
Not
so the
snakes.
Next day we put our tent up long before it got dark.
During the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something we did, too, as a family when camping. It was always centered around fishing. Mm-hmm. When we went to Canada and camped in an old logging camp. It took forever to get there. And, again, you had to use your tent.
And I felt that I was raised very independently by my parents, you know, very...
To be independent.
My brother and I were equals, which was rather unusual at the time. We had the same chores, and he wasn't treated differently because he was a boy or mm-hmm. me as a girl.
Mm-hmm. What happened when you learned to drive?
Oh, well, I had to. My father made me change all the tires on the car before he would let me get my license, because he said he wasn't going to have me be helpless and be dependent on somebody else, some stranger to... Mm-hmm. Changed my tires. Unfortunately, he didn't tell me how to figure out when the tire was flat. So,
oh, wow.
The first time I had a flat tire, I drove all the way home with it and said to him, "Dad, there's something wrong with the car."
Did your brother have to do that too?
Yes, my brother did.
He
too,
did too.
Of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I always felt very lucky that I think that it helped me a lot in life.
Mm-hmm.
To be treated that way. And mm-hmm. and when I was on a drill team in high school with 50 or so young gals, and we had a reunion many years later, I was the only one that went to college, and most of them didn't go to college because their families said didn't see the need for it.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to be housewives and raise kids, mm-hmm. and then they ended up with bad marriages, many of them, and they ended up in the workplace anyway, and they weren't prepared for it. So they were kind of bitter about it.
I guess so. I would be too. Yeah. I think my the support and love from my family, extended family, really gave me A good sense of self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so important.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, to do what you need to do in your life, to make your decisions and
mm-hmm.
and just go for it. So hopefully we've passed that along to the kids, our daughters, and we also have two grandsons now, so we have another generation.
Yeah, which is certainly an experience I never thought I was going to have.
Yeah, she said she was afraid of babies, but as it turns out, it was an unfounded fear. She does very well with babies.
I'm still afraid of babies.
And they call us Grandma Lori and Grandma Kathy, and they say we're going to the grandma's house.
Yeah, yes.
And that's working out very well so far.
Uh-huh. So we're
hoping to, Kathy is retired.
I'm accidentally retired on account of my health issues.
Right.
But it's very nice to have all this time, and we hope to do some traveling in the future, I guess.
Yeah, and I would like to retire, but I need to stay in the workplace to have health insurance. Actually, it would be nice if Kathy could have health insurance through my company, but it doesn't offer it. So she has to obtain health insurance elsewhere. That's a very, that's an unfortunate thing. Yeah, if we were able to marry, she would have health insurance through me. Mm-hmm. But that's not available. So.
Ah, well.
Yes. And when she was ill and I needed to take time off, I could not take family leave because she didn't count. And I was told by my company that I should just make an arrangement with my boss. And fortunately, my boss was up for this idea, and he allowed me to only work part-time, you know, part of the day, so I could go to the hospital in the morning and the night to be with her when she was ill. But what would have happened had my boss not been amenable to that arrangement? I don't know. So that was a big issue.
Since
we managed through that, though, and
yes, fortunately we got through that.
Uh-huh.
And we have, let's see, three of our kids are married.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is married to an East Indian, and we had a huge
marriage ceremony
in a Hindu church, and we all wore saris, which was very neat, including my mother, who was 93 at the time. that was, and all Lori's aunts came.
Yes.
One of the marriages was
Serbian Orthodox.
Yes. And so, they had to do a long 1 hour ceremony where they tied each other up with scarves and put these.
Yeah.
Crowns on their heads.
Right. And so, you know, things have worked out well for both of these cultures. We're very accepting of us.
Yes. Yes.
Even though
Even the Indian one, and because they, you know, the Shyam's parents had an arranged marriage, and they really sort of thought they wanted to arrange his.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they wanted to introduce him to
some
young ladies. And he said, "No, what, I have a girlfriend."
Mm-hmm.
And they were not sure about that.
Hmm.
So, you know, not only not Hindu, but, you know, an American
Caucasian. American girl, yeah.
And then an American Caucasian with lesbian parents.
Yeah, yeah.
That
threw a little something else
into it. But they were up to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they really have accepted Lisa.
Yeah, they're very loving. Oh, and our third daughter is married also. And she informed her husband-to-be about us, that we were lesbians, just before when they got out of the car to come into the house to have dinner with us.
To meet us
the first time, she informed him.
She gave him 30 seconds.
To think about it, yeah. So when he did the sign of the cross, you know, just before we ate our pizza for dinner, I thought he was a very devout boy. As it turns out, he was.
So, and then we have, we also have the youngest daughter is a single mother.
Mm-hmm. And has a young son.
So that's a bit of a struggle. And
mm-hmm. But fortunately, she has a big family, too, to support, help support her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes.
And our last a child is, she's not married, but she does have a boyfriend. So those are our families and us.
Yeah, that's our life so far. And hopefully we're going to be doing a lot more.
Yes, hope to have more adventures in the future.